Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook. Ben, it's great to be joining you. I'm standing in for Sophie this week. How you been?
Mate, really well. Yeah, Sophie's had a massive couple of days. Nice of you to come in and join me and take us through what might be our last little cricket episode for a little while after what's been an incredible summer in cricket. Some great highlights made, Alex Carey and Travis Head with their hundreds at Adelaide Oval. But of course, South Australia in the Sheffield Shield final for the second year running. That is incredible. We'll get to it. But start me off with what you think might be the biggest news story of the week, mate.
Well, the one that sort of popped up for me, Hookie, was a bit of a strange one. This furore about Cam Green leaving a media interview.
Yeah. Well, just give me your take on it very quickly, first of all. I know you're not one to, you know, opinionate heavily on too much, but just tell me what you made of it as a sort of a passive observer.
When I see things like this, I'm thinking clickbait straight away, and the amount of people that have picked up on it, I think there's a lot of people that would have got a lot of eyes on ads and things like that. I question the reporter. What's that going to do to his long-term relationship with Cameron Green? You know, and Cameron Green, he's a national cricketer. Could he have let it go and just accepted the apology from the coach? Possibly.
It's a fair point. One thing I will reflect on when you said that it was probably a bit clickbaity. Everything in media now is clickbait, Wallace. Every story that goes online is determined wholly and solely to try and generate a click. So I tell you what, Tom Decent, if that is the goal, then give him a big tick, all right? There are a couple of things that I reckon are at play here, and I think it's a whole lot more nuanced than Cameron Green was childish. Tom Decent shouldn't have reported it the way he reported it. I reckon there's clouds all the way around this. The first thing I've got to say, and give Cam Green some credit, is that he was playing in a Sheffield Shield match, which was of no consequence to Western Australia because they were already out of the running for the Sheffield Shield final. And pretty much everyone else that's in the IPL did not front up and play that final round. And that includes some guys that were in the running or had their team in the running to make the Sheffield Shield final. So we've got 16 guys in the IPL out of Australia. Some of them don't play red ball cricket anyway, so we'll rule them out. But Travis Head didn't play the final Sheffield Shield game. Josh Inglis didn't play. Pat Cummins, now he's injured, but didn't play. Josh Hazlewood, potentially injured as well, but didn't play. Mitchell Stark didn't play. Nathan Ellis didn't play. Jack Edwards didn't play. Xavier Bartlett was one of the few who did. And the other one, surprisingly, for a guy who is earning $4 million out of the IPL, is Cameron Green. I thought it was a bit of a surprise that he even played, and I want to give him absolute full credit for fronting up and playing so close to the IPL when plenty of others didn't. I honestly thought this was really out of character for him. He's a lovely guy. He's mild-mannered. I was really surprised to see the way he reacted, and it probably, I guess, gives a bit of an insight into the Australian cricket dressing room at the moment that does have a persecution mentality. They are very, very concerned about what other people say about them. And we saw that when Stuart Clark was very strong in his criticism of a lot of the officials outside of the immediate team, so chairman of selectors and coach and those sorts of things that Stuart Clark was very critical of on ABC, and suddenly the ABC got black banned from post-match media interviews. I would argue, Wallace, that only Alex Carey deals with that sort of media scrutiny really well, and perhaps the Australian cricket team as a whole needs to be able to deal with that. But yes, I do feel like Cam Green, there were better ways to manage this, and we'll probably talk about that. But this was just out of character, and I do feel like, and we'll get to it, but Tom Decent, the way he wrote that probably made Cameron Green look worse than he needed to be made.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you make in regards to the fact that he was there. I turned up to play. Should have you taken the interview?
Yeah. I look, you know, it's easy for me to say, and I'm not in the business anymore. I suspect I'd have left it. If I'd have been a part of that interview, I just reckon I would have said, okay, well, I'll find something else to write about. You're at a first-class cricket game. There's plenty of other stories going around. New South Wales was, as an organisation, was under all sorts of scrutiny. They were sacking coaches and everything was going on at the time. So maybe he could have thought about doing something else. And, I mean, it really was quite the smear on Cameron Green, wasn't it? As I said, there were maybe 10 other stories to pursue.
Just on that, I have a story that I think that he could have followed, and that was that Cameron Green was the only cricketer that signed up for the IPL who played in the Shield match that week.
Yeah. You know. Look, this happened in public. It was probably going to get reported somewhere, but I don't think you needed to be the person responsible for doing such a smearing. I just think, if Tom maybe had his time again, he might have left that one alone, because I do think there will be a bit of long-term repercussions for it. Can I just maybe make one more point here, Wallace? I reckon there is one other organisation to blame, and that is the Western Australian Cricket Association Media Department. Now, I don't know if they had a media person on site at the time or if this was being managed extraneously. It's unusual for a media person to travel with the team for the Sheffield Shield, and a lot of this is managed by the New South Wales guy. But if anyone had any inkling that Cameron Green was in this sort of a mood, why would you even offer him up in the first place? So he was put up on offer to do an interview, which was then rescinded. But of course, all of the, you know, Tom Decent was there saying, well, I've come here specifically to interview Cameron Green, which then got turned into a, you can only interview him for 2 minutes and only ask about this particular Shield game. Well, all of that's not going to fly. And I just reckon it required someone from Western Australia media just to stand in front of Green and say, no, look, mate, if you don't want to do it, I will deal with this. This is an easy, this is my job. My job is to take the bullet for you. I will go out and take the bullet, and I'll say to Tom, hey, listen, mate, I'm sorry. We got our wires crossed. We made a mistake. We thought Green was happy to do it, but he really doesn't want to do any media. He just wants to come here, play this game. He's had a great week. Yeah, he got 100, but look, he's just not doing any media. I'm sorry. Can I provide you with another opportunity for a story with this guy, that guy? And that didn't happen. And I reckon that was a real mistake from Western Australian media to miss what I reckon is their responsibility. And that's to stand in front of the guy who really doesn't want to be there so that you don't end up with what this outcome was.
Can I take you to the South Australian Sheffield Shield final?
Please do. How exciting.
It is.
Back-to-back Sheffield Shield finals, defending the title, and we go to the final once again. It is incredible, Wallace.
Are they a chance?
No, they really are. You know what, Wallace? They're a pretty complete team at the moment. I always felt with South Australian cricket there has been some sort of gaping weakness. Like, we might have historically not had good enough fast bowlers, or our spin options were just not strong enough, or we had holes in our batting. And, you know, we've seen that historically even 3-4 years ago, you know. But right now, this is a very complete team. Mackenzie Harvey replaced Connor McInerney about the midpoint of the year, and he's looked really solid as an opening batter without absolutely setting the world on fire. But he's been a good foil at the top. Henry Hunt's returning to his peak. He's third in the competition for runs this year. Nathan McSweeney probably hasn't had his best year. He's only averaged 27, but he's a proven century maker and a great leader and an excellent catcher as well. And all of those sort of go into his overall makeup as a player. And so I think he's been really important once again. Jason Sanger started slowly but has come good at the right time. Alex Carey is all class. Jake Lehman has completely transformed his career. And then at number seven, Liam Scott is probably having his best first-class year, and last year he won the Neil Danzy medal. So then you've got Menenti and McAndrew, who have been very capable in the lower order with the bat. We've got a wonderful depth of pace bowling. If we need two spinners, which I doubt, but Lloyd Pope is very capable as the second spinner behind Ben Menenti, who I'm sure will play. So, yeah, look, Victoria have been very good. They won 7 games this year. You don't win 7 games and go into a final not as anything other than favourite, and they should be, in particular at home. But South Australia, I reckon you play this game 10 times, South Australia might win 4 of them, and because it's a one-off match, 40% chance, they're right in it.
Junction Oval, what do you think of the pitch?
Yeah, that's a good question, Wallace, because it's a venue that hasn't been used a lot for Sheffield Shield cricket this year. There's only been 3 games there. There was the rain-affected draw that South Australia played, and the other two were Victorian wins after they batted first and put on modest totals, but the game tends to move along really quickly at the Junction Oval. So unless the wicket's prepared really differently, and I doubt that, one thing I'm expecting is this is going to be a result. Only significant weather would affect this being an outright result one way or the other. And I do feel like at the moment, South Australia probably goes into this clash feeling like they've got just a few more runs on the board, literally and figuratively, in marginal conditions like this. I feel like whoever bats first, is probably not going to necessarily be whoever wins the toss, but whoever bats first, if you can score in excess of 300 in the first innings, I really feel like you can be driving the game from there. And I just feel like South Australia win the toss, bat first, they get 300. Victoria, if they bat first, forget win the toss, I keep saying it. But if Victoria bat first, I just feel like the South Australian attack could potentially make some inroads early, roll them for somewhere between 200 and 250, and South Australia are driving the game again. So if the wicket looks anything like what we've seen throughout the year, I think that will suit South Australia very, very well.
Now, Hookie, can we turn our attention to the South Aussie women? How did they go this year? Firstly, the positives, and secondly, the negatives.
Yep, let's start with the positives. It's a really solid year for South Australian women. They finished fourth, and that's not really reflective of where they were at. They were right in the season up until the final game. There were some results going on around them that made it very, very difficult for them to make the final. But to go into the final game and you're in with a genuine chance of making the final is excellent. And they were unlucky. They played ACT, the team that finished either fifth or sixth, I think, Wallace, that they had absolutely control of the first of their two games against them. They were none for 21 in the second over, chasing a fairly modest 250. Rain came down, game washed out, points shared. Win that game and they would have had enough points to make it through to the final. Well, they probably still had to win the last one, but not in a manner where they had to. So there were some mistakes throughout the year, but I really feel like they did a lot right. They played well far more often than they didn't, and they were a little bit unlucky to be confronted with the situation that they were in the last game, where they were chasing 190, which was a modest total from New South Wales, but they had to get it in like around about 25 overs to make the bonus point and the net run rate and all of those sorts of things. And so they went really hard, really early, were bowled out for about 120 and missed the final. But I think overall, Mick Delaney, the coach, Gemma Barsby, the captain, should be largely pretty proud of what they did and where they are on the premiership table present probably isn't really reflective of how good a year it was.
Well, there's the positives, Hookie. What were some of the things you reckon they fell short on?
Yeah, they had a trip to Perth, Wallace, and I've put this on the podcast before, which was very, very un-South Australian women's team-like. They were as strong as they'd been for the entire series. They had their Australian players back, so that was Megan Shoot, Darcy Brown, Talia McGrath, and they put in two of the most insipid performances I can recall, both of them significant losses to Western Australia. Now, Western Australia aren't the worst team in the competition. They finished third. But I was really surprised at how poor they were when South Australia fielded what was a full-strength side and really didn't fire a bullet. And that was that meant they'd made three losses in a row. There was a remarkable split in their second and their third game. I think it was something like 2.5 months. So it's a funny competition, the WNCL, a 12-game league that takes, I think, you know, 6.5 months to play. I think you could probably condense down a little bit. Story for another time. But they lost to Queensland in the second clash against them, which was their opening round, and then they lost both of those games to Western Australia. It had them on the back foot. From there, they were excellent. Good wins against Tasmania. They beat Tasmania early. Then the win and the loss to Queensland. Excellent performances against Victoria and ACT, where they had the washout. But yeah, that double loss to Western Australia really hurt them in the end. Here's one other thing that hurt them, Wallace. Their starts with the bat were too often letting them down. So in 12 games, they had three good starts with the bat. There was one washout, so that was the fourth. The other eight times, they'd lost three wickets before they'd got to 50 runs. And that makes it very, very difficult in one-day cricket to be 3 for 40. So I had a quick look through against Tasmania. This is those games that I'm talking about. Tasmania, 4 for 30. Western Australia, 3 for 40 and 3 for 4. Queensland, they were 3 for 28 and 5 for 50. Then they were 2 for 5. Victoria, they were 3 for 44. ACT, they were 3 for 47. New South Wales, in the second game, they were 5 for 31. You know enough about cricket to know that if that's how you get off in the first 10, 15 overs of your innings, it makes it very, very difficult to either chase down a score or post one. And that will probably be something that Mick Delaney will need to address. I mean, in isolation, Ellie Johnson, Emma Dubrow, Courtney Webb, all good players and all can make a contribution on their day, but too often all three of them failed together and South Australia really struggled from there. The one thing I will say, Gemma Barsby, I haven't looked at the numbers, but gee, she did a lot of rescue jobs from the middle order. She's batting 8 for that team. And I wonder whether she maybe needs to be elevated up the order to 5 or 6, because I think her influence in that group needs to be for a greater part of the innings. And if I would love to see her coming in when we're 3 for 40, because I think she could be a heck of a lot more efficient and just shuffle everyone down one.
Is there going to be any change in the off-season for the team?
I suspect not. Mick Delaney, I'm certain they'll retain as coach. Gemma Barsby, I expect to continue. I think we'll have a watch on Megan Shute. She is getting towards the end of her career, and whether she continues to play in the one-day domestic level, that will be interesting to see, or whether she might just simply make her focus T20 cricket, and that would be a reasonable thing for her to do at this stage of her career, not dissimilar to what Sean Tate did, and that was quite groundbreaking at the time. But I would feel like with everything that Megan Shute has done, if she said, hey, listen, I'm just going to play for the Adelaide Strikers, that would be a reasonable way for her to see out her career. I mean, she loves the game. She might want to keep playing as well. And, you know, the WBBL is a very, very short, condensed 6-week in-and-out season. But that might be the only obvious change, and that might give a bit more opportunity for someone like an Emerson Filsell or one of those young up-and-coming pace bowlers to take that next step.
Ben, let's move on to the Hooked On Sport medal of oats. What have you got?
Yes, Wallace. Well, I'm going to get to the end of this little monologue and tell you that we have a winner in the competition, even with the Sheffield Shield final still to come, because someone has an unassailable lead. Let me just share with you what happened. I've got two games, South Australia versus New South Wales, in the WNCL. So this is the Women's National Cricket League. In the first of those two games against New South Wales, Courtney Webb with the 3 votes for her runs, Gemma Barsby with the 2 votes for her runs and wickets, and then Bridget Patterson picked up the 1 vote. And surprisingly enough, Bridget Patterson, her first vote for the year. I was stunned when I was going through the leaderboard just before. In the second game against New South Wales, Eleanor LaRosa took 3 wickets. I gave her the 3 votes. Gemma Barsby, a couple of runs in the middle, and also I think she took a wicket as well, so the 2 votes for her. And Holly Armitage with some runs in the middle order. She picked up 1 vote. Then in the men, we've got two Sheffield Shield games. Nathan McAndrew picked up 3 votes against New South Wales, took 5 wickets. Jason Sanger, I was talking about him earlier, came good at the right time, got a fantastic 100 in that game against New South Wales. And Henry Thornton took 5 wickets in the first innings. He got the 1 vote. And then in our final Shield game against Victoria, Henry Hunt picked up 3 with his 80-odd and 40-odd. Ben Menenti played a really important lower order role with the bat once again and picked up 2 votes. And Nathan McSweeney, I gave 1 vote too. Some handy runs without really setting the world on fire, and a couple of wickets as well. Plus, as I always say with Nathan McSweeney, an excellent pair of hands fielding in the slips there. So the leaderboard, Nathan McAndrew is on 13 votes. Gemma Barsby is on 12. Mackenzie Harvey, Nathan McSweeney on 10. Liam Scott, Jake Lehman on 9. Brendan Doggett, Courtney Webb on 7, Maddie Penner, AJ Wellington, Henry Hunt on 9, the rest are 5 and below, so they're out of the running anyway. But as we said at the start, we would load the women for the fact that they will play less games than the men. It's reached the point now where the men are going to play 18 games for the season and the women have played only 12. So every woman has had their score multiplied by 3 and divided by 2. So the final votes have Gemma Barsby winning the Hooked On Sport medal on 18 votes, by 5 votes from Nathan McAndrew. Of course, Nathan McAndrew can still pick up 3 more in the Sheffield Shield final. But Gemma Barsby's not going to be rolled in the count. So Nathan McAndrew second on 13 at this point. Mackenzie Harvey and Nathan McSweeney have been bumped by Courtney Webb, who jumped up to 10.5. And then it's Liam Scott, Jake Lehman on 9, along with Maddie Penner and AJ Wellington. So Gemma Barsby, congratulations to her, the inaugural Hooked on Sport cricket medalist for season 25-26.
Bravo.
Yes. So Gemma, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, there's no prize for this yet, mate. We're going to find sponsors galore, and when you win it next year, you'll be receiving all sorts of prizes and awards. However, just be satisfied with the thrill of winning the inaugural Hooked on Sport medal.
Now, Ben, let's turn our attention to this weekend's semi-finals in the men's Premier Cricket. Can you give us a quick overview and your tips for the weekend?
2 games. The top team, Kensington, will play the fourth-ranked team, Port Adelaide. Adelaide will take on Sturt. We'll start off with Kensington and Port Adelaide, first of all. I've got to say, I reckon both of these games are genuine flips of the coin. Port Adelaide, I feel like Port Adelaide has slightly more firepower than Kensington. So, you know, Cam Valenti is the obvious one who's been in really good form in the second half of the year. And he's the kind of guy who can just, with bat and with ball, rip games out of opposition hands on his own. He can do it himself. So I do feel like Port Adelaide probably arrive at that game with a few more weapons. I am going to be interesting to see. It's only Wednesday, Wallace, and I don't know the teams yet. I think what will be really interesting to see how many of the Sheffield Shield players make themselves available for this game. So is Henry Hunt going to front up for Kensington? That would be interesting to see if he makes an appearance, because then I think Kensington probably have maybe a bigger weapon than Port Adelaide do. So that will make it interesting. But if you pushed me, I'm probably going to lead ever so slightly to Kensington for this game, only because they just seem to get it done in March. They are just such a good finals team. I'm going to go with Kensington, but the result won't surprise me. And if Cam Valenti takes 4 wickets and makes 130, that wouldn't surprise me either. And that would obviously be enough to push Port Adelaide through to the final. That game's at Woodville Oval, which is an interesting scheduling as well. Kensington's change rooms are being rebuilt at the moment. They've got no change room, so that game's been moved to a neutral venue, which I think will suit Port Adelaide as well. But I'm going to go Kensington only just. Kensington won the grand final, which was at Woodville Oval there last year. Adelaide and Sturt, another really interesting game. Again, I feel like Adelaide's probably got slightly more firepower than Sturt. Connor Carroll's been excellent. Noah McFadyen will go into the Bradman medal count next week as the favourite alongside Cameron Valenti. They've got good bowling stocks. They've got guys who can hold the bat. The Kelly boys are always a threat for Sturt, as is Brad Davis, who's been an excellent player for them. I'm going to go with Adelaide only just. Again, I think this is a really tough call, but I expect at the end of the weekend, this game at home for Adelaide as well, which is also a big advantage for them, I expect that it'll be Adelaide and Kensington in the grand final in a week and a half's time.
Brilliant, Hooky. Now, we've got a couple of interviews coming up.
Yes. So if people are wondering why we've spent some time talking about the men's semi-finals but haven't touched the women's final, well, there's a simple answer for that. Keep listening. We're going to catch up with not one but both coaches of the grand final teams, Jason Gentle, the coach of the Glenelg Cricket Club, and Jamie Pennelly, the coach of the Kensington Cricket Club, both to join us right after this. Well, the biggest game of the year in South Australian Premier Women's First Grade Cricket gets underway at Karen Rolton Oval on Sunday morning. It is the Minor Premiers Glenelg taking on the defending champions Kensington. Both their coaches have been good enough to join us. Jason Gentle, welcome back.
Thank you, Ben.
And Jamie Pennelly, nice to see you again, my man.
Thanks, Hooky. Good to be here.
First of all, Jace, Minor Premier, second time running. Assess the year.
It's been a good year for us. We've had a good mix of high-end talent from the SACA playing, but a good year for us getting quite a few kids involved and birthed into first grade cricket. So this year we probably played 4 or 5 kids under 16, starting to get a taste of first grade cricket, and that's probably been the most pleasing part of the year for me.
And what about you, Panners? came from third, emphatically won a preliminary final last weekend. Do you feel like you're coming in good form?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to leave your best form to the end part of the season. But, yeah, I think we've been always looking to gain and improve during the year, and it felt a really emphatic performance against Sturt, which is always good. But, yeah, you want to get an opportunity in the grand final, and now that we're here, it's good against the top side. They've been the best performed side, Glenelg, and it'll be, hopefully it's a really good spectacle. And on a great surface like KRO, I don't think we've played there for a while, so it's a great opportunity for both teams to be on KRO.
Yeah, my vague recollection is this was on number two, Park 25, number two last year. So yep. Nice that you're back on the main venue. Jason, you're in exactly the same boat as you're in last year. Minor Premier taking on Kensington, who have got the wise old heads, dare I suggest. I say old, and you know what, the average age is about 22 or something like that. But do you take any learnings out of what you experienced last year?
Absolutely. I mean, last year we look at the way that we prepared and the way that we took the game on. There's probably quite a few nerves in last year's game. Not to say there's no nerves this year, but at the same time, I think just the way we play and the way we want to adapt our game style, we've changed throughout the year. And yeah, it's just a case of being free to execute on the weekend.
Panners, you're chasing five in a row, mate. It is basically uncharted waters. The last time five premierships in a row was won in women's cricket was back in 1952-53, 73 years ago. Is it lost on you the enormity of what you've achieved and what you're going to try and achieve this weekend?
It's a good hookie. It's a good start. I think that from a program point of view, it's great to be playing grand finals. And it was great that all four sides played in finals this year, which was lovely. But you know what it's like. Every year is different and you play with a different side. Not one of those sides is the same. So what would get lost is that we don't value the year and the people that we have with us right now is very important. It's great. It's not something that I don't think motivates us as much as what we can do each season, and having the group that we've got is special in its own right, because again, the other four, we haven't had the same players. So we'll enjoy playing together as a team, because we'll probably never play again.
Mm. No, it's a good point. Jason, it's a really interesting time for Glenelg. The men's program has been exceptional. I know that's out of Division 2, but absolutely dominated it. You've already ticked the box of returning to Division 1. There's a grand final next week for them to take out the Division 2 title. But I feel like, as a club, there's some real momentum around at Brighton Road once again.
Definitely. I think this year's approach by the men, it's been, I guess, last year's quite a humbling experience for them to go down to the second grade. But the way that the club's approached this year has been around, you know, a lot of hard work, head down, bum up type stuff. And really just making sure that back to basics and doing it well. From our point of view this year as well, from the women, we've been training alongside the first grade men. So sharing the facilities at the same time. And it's been a great experience to be able to see how they go about their training, and obviously vice versa, to be able to learn from each other and get that vibe, the really positive vibe pumping throughout the club.
I reckon anyone who's come this far listening to this podcast will know enough about women's cricket to know a lot of the big names on both of your teams, but there's a couple of little surprise packets who've been really impressive this year. And I'll start with you, Panners. Just tell us a little bit about Elsa Barnfather. It's one of the all-time great names in South Australian cricket, but just give us a bit of an indication of what she does and her influence around the group.
Yes, she's great, Elsa. It is a quality name, isn't it? And you won't be surprised she's a UK girl either with a name like that, yep. But she's lovely. She actually started with Glenelg when she came as part of the Root Academy. I don't think it was Darren Lean, but it was the Root Academy. And look, she had some friends with Shay Daly and Eliza and a few of the girls. She felt like it would be a great opportunity to come back again and play with us. But she's just getting better and better as a cricketer. Hopefully Australia and Kensington's playing a part in that. But I reckon she's starting to really get her strength going with her cricket. And she's doing a lot of work when she goes back to the UK. So she's played some great innings for us when it counted. She's a batter, quality batter, top order bat, strong girl, physically got great attributes, hits well and can build a really good inning. So we've loved having her 2 years in a row. And I think she enjoys getting down to the Aussie summer, but has really found, I think, an improvement over the last two seasons we've seen. So it's lovely having her.
And Jace, tell us a little bit about Ellie Phillips, who has posted some really good numbers with both bat and ball this year.
It's been a surprise packet for us coming over from the UK. We didn't know too much about her on her way over, but generally swings the ball both ways, which is fantastic. And quite substantially, so always keeps the stumps in play and the edge of the bat in play, which is great. And yeah, she's played some real quality innings towards the back end. A couple of times this year, putting on 50, 60 run partnerships in very vital games to get us over the line. So she's been fantastic.
Panners, the three of us will all convene at Adelaide Oval next Wednesday, win, lose or draw for you guys, because it'll be the Bradman Rolton medal. One thing I do know, Panners, is that Karen Rolton's going to be there. Will she be draping yet another medal around Sarah Lowe's neck? It seems to be just an annual rite of passage now, isn't it?
Yeah, I reckon they've got a WhatsApp group, just Karen and Sarah, just to say we're going to meet each other on stage. I don't think you know Sarah well too, and in fact the whole competition knows Sarah well. She's firstly a wonderful citizen and then a really good cricketer second, because she's done a lot of work for her to continue playing and giving back to the competition as well as the club is brilliant. If Karen Rolton was valued on leadership, she would win it. Honestly, she would always be up there, you know, with the top echelon, but it goes on performance. And this year she's done what she does. She makes big, she's still really handy with the ball and great cricketer still. And I hope she's got a fourth one, if she's lacking up to earn it.
Yeah, currently equal with Chris Britt on three, and four would be uncharted territory for men or women. Of course, Cam Valenti, I mean, he could win a fourth as well on the same night. So all what we can look forward to next week. Jason, Ella Wilson is someone that I've watched a fair bit of, because I spend a lot of my time following the WNCL as my work with at Karen Rolton Oval and Adelaide Oval. Obviously a really important cog for you. I imagine she learns a bit from who will be her opposite number, Courtney Neal, an experienced pace bowler for South Australia. Just tell us a little bit about Ella Wilson and her development in the last 2 years.
She's a bit unlucky the last couple of years with a few injuries and niggles, etc. But finally getting herself fit, and you would have seen with the WNCL being right up there opening the bowling from the other end with Courtney in the last couple of weeks. Bowls good wheels, good shape, which has been great, and it's good just to see her fit and fighting through it. Can genuinely hit a ball too pretty hard. And, you know, as a cricketer, she's just learning but becoming more mature as well in her game. She's thinking about it a bit more, reads the game quite well. And as a really good club person as well, loves Glenelg, always down watching, even if she's had the other state duties. Going all right, I think. So she'll be definitely one to look out for on the weekend.
Yeah. I'll say, hey Panners, I kept a pretty close eye on the preliminary final on the weekend. The WNCL team, South Australia, played Thursday, Saturday, and I expected most of those girls to be looking for a breather. I think every single one of them fronted up, which just goes to show that there's still a lot of club pride, even for these women who are playing at a level above this competition. It's pretty impressive, I reckon, that they all came back and played 3 days out of four.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sure Jace would attest too that I think the girls are enjoying the level of competition that's in Premier Cricket. I'll talk on behalf of our girls. Whenever they're available, they put their hand up and they wanted to be part of that semi-final. And Matty Penner, who's brand new to the club, has really embraced what we're on about, and she was brilliant because they are fatigued, right? It's the end of the season. There's emotional times as well that they have to deal with. But for them to all come back after lots of training and cricket was excellent, and we really pride ourselves on giving them the environment to come back to, so they do enjoy it. And all the time it's about fun and being with their close mates as well. So it was great to see, and yeah, their performance was fantastic as well.
Boys, so appreciative of your time. Jamie, I know, and I want to wish you all the best. You've got a semi-final in the men's competition to play, so you will have a very, very busy weekend. Either result, it's going to be an incredible story. Kensington chasing five in a row. Glenelg chasing their first ever women's first grade premiership. I don't want to put my foot in either camp. Obviously, as a past player at Glenelg, I think that would be great. But, Jamie, what you and the Kensington Career Club have done and the legacy that you are leaving is something really special as well. Thanks for your time this afternoon. Good luck on Sunday, and may the best team win.
Nice. Thanks, Hickey.
Thanks, Jace. Good on you. See
thanks,
you
Jamie. Take care.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks, mate.
That stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.